Welcome to HeatCast, the official podcast of Heat Changed It. As always, I am Mike Chisholm. As always, I am so excited to be here and to talk about the world of men's mental wellness in all of the facets and pathways that we explore in that topic. Obviously, we are the official podcast of Heat Changed It. If you haven't downloaded the Heat Changed It app, what are you waiting for? It has never looked better. Things are happening behind the scenes. I know I'm a broken record when it comes to that, but it's just really exciting to watch this thing grow. And at the end of the day, you know, He Changed It is the first men's mental wellness platform that has been created. And we're incredibly proud of what's been happening and what is going to happen. Now, we have been in partnership for some special episodes of HeatCast with a company called TELUS. For the Canadians, you know what TELUS is. For other people around the world, you might not necessarily know who they are. TELUS is a massive, massive communications company in Canada, cell phone provider, broadcast television provider, massive internet provider. And we went into and did a very cool program with TELUS. The result was five amazing episodes of HeatCast, which we are now going to put out on our platform here. The episodes are with a band. The band is called Proper Man. And Proper Man is a local band from Kelowna, British Columbia. And all five members have a story. The entire band has a story. And so as a narrative, all five episodes tie in together, kind of like Voltron, you know, a whole bunch of robots coming together to make one super robot, kind of like that. Each episode is amazing. And I'm so proud of the work that we have done. I'm so proud to be friends with these guys. And it's a pretty special story. So without further ado, HeatCast, the official podcast of He Changed It, would like to present Proper Man, the HeatCast Conversations. Welcome to HeatCast, the official podcast of He Changed It. My name is Mike Chisholm, and we are watching the five-part special, Proper Man, the HeatCast Conversations. That we shot in conjunction with TELUS Story Hive earlier this year. We're releasing them on our platform now. We get to the guitar player. Who doesn't love a good guitar player? Wow. Gosh, Petri is certainly that and more. I love Petri. He and Jason, as co-founders of Proper Man, I believe are a yin and yang to each other in many respects. They are extremely complimentary to each other. Petri is, he's analytical. And really thoughtful and technical, and I just really appreciate him very much opening up, talking about his vantage point. His in many respects, Proper Man exists because of him, and I can't wait to get his story out there. And once again, very grateful for all of these guys being as vulnerable as they are. There are going to be people who watch these episodes that get helped because they can relate, and relation. is kind of a silver bullet, knowing you're not alone. And there's a lot of guys going through stuff right now. Hearing these five guys open up about things that they have been through, things that have helped, will help other people. And that is a driving force behind why these guys said yes to this project. Proper Man is incredible. Go check them out as a band. Please enjoy Petri on the HeatCast Conversations with Proper Man.
Petri, to me, and to Proper Man. Well, I started playing hockey with Petri when I was 10 years old. The joke I say on stage is he's a really good person, but he had a really shitty shot. It's like the wounded duck, you know, those hockey players know what I'm talking about. No, I've known Petri a very long time, very smart individual, very even keel. I have issues with sometimes anxiety and stress and all that great stuff. He's very calm and cool, even though he feels it too. So he's always been a very good person in my life to help balance me out. Incredibly good songwriter. He throws, like I say, all these Proper Man songs. Most of them he threw the chords down for. I'd go over top of it and the band would come in later and make it what it is. Without the band, there's nothing. It's just a process. But Petri, you know, because it was his job in the beginning to do this thing, 7 years later, he's putting a suit on every Saturday and getting on stage, and he always says it before we go on. So he's a really interesting guy. He looks at us and goes, we're good looking guys. And he's dead serious. It's a definitely a midlife crisis thing. Like, you know, some dudes, they get in the car and they're like, they're the shit. We sit in that little alleyway before we play, and it's like, we think we're playing Madison Square Garden. Everyone's hugging and high-fiving. And every time Petri's like, yeah, we're really good looking guys. And I don't know why he says that, but that's Petri.
We're here with Petri, finally.
Hello, yes.
Hello. When Jason talks about you, he talks about Finnish heritage.
Yes.
Essatikinen. He says, hey, he knows Essatikinen. That's the first thing he says that all the time on stage about you. Yeah. Like born in Finland?
Born in Sweden.
In Sweden.
Yeah. And so my parents, Finnish. My dad and mom happened to be living in Sweden at the time. My dad was a contract welder, so yeah. He was working at a special project, and so I was born there. And so that's, if you know anything about Finland, Swedish kind of dynamics,
mostly,
you know,
the hockey,
I'm the black sheep, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know,
okay.
I love to bust the Swedes chops,
you makes
know,
sense,
and you know, so, and vice versa. So, but it's a friendly kind of, so yeah, born in Sweden, and my parents emigrated to Canada. I grew up in Kitimat, same as Jason.
Yeah. How old were you when you moved to Kitimat?
Oh, that was in 74. So I would have been a year and a half. And my mom was pregnant with my brother.
Yeah.
7 months. I can't believe they let her on the plane. But I think back then it was probably a little more loosey-goosey on that.
Intercontinental
rules, and,
yeah.
But I think they told me this story, and I don't know if it's true, but, you know, the only reason they were able to get on the plane was because there was a doctor on board. So,
wow. Intercontinental.
I'll have to ask my mom if that really is a true story.
Yeah, no kidding.
Things, so. Yeah,
And moving the whole family over with the baby and
infant,
the baby on the way.
Infant, baby on the way, yeah. And moved into Kitimat, BC in February 74.
Yeah.
And the snow up there, I think, most BC people, you know, who have been up there, or they know the area. It's just incredible the amount of snow they get there. And they didn't see the mountains or sky for what my mom, you know, told me for days. And they were just, what did we do here? Where do we live? And then I think they, you know, the one day when it finally, there was a break in the weather,
yeah.
They looked, and it's just beautiful country up there. I mean, the mountains, it's basically nestled in a valley, and the mountains are just imposing. So, but
the very definition of God's country.
Yes, yes. Yeah. That would, when the weather's nice, it is God's country.
Growing up playing hockey right away, did you and Jason meet playing hockey?
Yeah, we met. So he was always kind of a year ahead of me in hockey. So
yeah.
Just the age difference, just how the minor hockey system works, of course. So I would kind of see him every second year. And it wouldn't have been until after about, it's all different nowadays with how they name the divisions and stuff for minor hockey.
Sure.
But it would have been Adam.
Yep.
And into Pee Wee when I started playing rep hockey. So, you know, we were a double A kind of rated town, you know.
You're wearing the Letterman jackets. You're the...
And so, the big dogs.
The big dogs.
And so I guess I could have played rep in Adam, but my parents didn't let me. You know, they weren't too sure about that. And I think one of the coaches convinced my mom and dad that, you know, hey, you should let them play rep hockey. And so I'm glad they did. So I probably would have never really met Jason then. So,
was music part of your life already?
I think it was. Mm-hmm. I loved to listen to music even from a young age. I didn't, and I think I got my first guitar I think my parents knew that I was musical. I mean, I think my uncle, I have an uncle, a couple uncles that are very musically inclined, and I would listen to music just relentlessly. Like, I mean,
what kind of stuff did you listen to?
Oh man, it varied. Honestly, like, I'm sure I was influenced by what my parents were listening on the record player. I mean, they were listening to a lot of Finnish folk music, of course, but you know, they were listening to classics, you know, Engelbert Humperdinck, Nana Mouskouri, Beatles, you know, all that kind of stuff that wasn't Finnish, but you know, that old people, I guess, listened to. At the
time. There's always music in the house though.
But yeah, there was music in the house, and so I mean, that, I think just when I got my first acoustic guitar, you know, nothing fancy, and I just started playing it, and then went into to band, you know, grade 6 and 7, and so always wanted to play guitar, so I played trumpet, and then come to grade 8, I didn't want to do band anymore because the band teacher wouldn't let me play guitar.
Aww.
And to this day, I regret it that I quit band, high school band.
Yeah,
at you know, grade 8, because I think it, I could have, not that I'm not happy with where I'm at right now as a musician, but I think it would have given me more tools earlier on.
More theory, and more structure when your brain is still learning.
Absolutely, and, absolutely, reading sheet music better.
Yeah.
From a young age, I think I would say really, you know, when I was 10, 11, 12 is when I really started to get very interested in music.
Cool.
My first record was Motley Crue, Shout at the Devil.
Very cool.
And my parents weren't happy. I mean, they hid that thing when they kind of, you know, because they're, you know, their English is a second language.
Sure.
But I mean, you look at the cover and it's just four dudes that are just satanic.
And the word devil on it. Yeah.
And Shout at the Devil. And you know, my dad's just like, what is this garbage? You know? And so they try and hide it on me, and you know, and I would find it. Sorry, Mom, you know. So, I knew where they tucked it, and so I'd secretly listen to it. And
anything that was pleasing to your ears, you went for it. You didn't put up boundaries when it came to that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Which makes a lot of sense, actually, watching Proper Man play. I mean, you could tell that the whole band doesn't seem to have any boundaries as to the influences are literally across the entire spectrum.
Yeah, I would agree. Really, we're blessed. Like, I mean, Jason and I always joke. I mean, Jason's very competent on the drums, but, you know, we always joke, you know, we're kind of the weak link, you know, as far as musicians, and because we're, I mean, Travis is a monster on keys. Justin, of course, on the drums is a machine, and Nori, his bass playing and his vocals, and he's been around the block, you know, he's played a lot, and so we're very fortunate to have these guys around us, and so we always joke that, you know, we kind of get away with it, but I mean, you know, of course, you know, with the songwriting, you know. Jason taught me a lot, and you know, and just from listening to my influences, it really, I've been happy how I've grown as a songwriter, really, like, because that was not my skill set until, you know, I mean, I did a little bit of it, you know, in the early days playing with Jason, you know, with punk bands and stuff, but it wasn't until, you know, really starting to work with him here, you know, getting back into it is just where I just kind of learned, you know, not only learned from him, but I just learned to trust myself too, you know, and trust how I, you know, be confident.
Did you have the imposter syndrome as a musician?
I always do. I still do. To this day. I think that's a natural thing for anyone, really.
Yeah.
And, I sometimes have it at work. Have it up here on stage, and you know, you're your own worst critic, of course. And and I think some men are probably more, you know, sensitive to that, and which can be an issue, right?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. I want to talk about like the formation of Proper Man. I mean, everybody, when we say, okay, well, you know, where did Proper Man come from? And really, at the end of the day, it comes down to you. They talk about how this band was started, and I love everything about the idea of friends being there for friends, and especially in this world, guys being there for guys, and how there are a lot of these things that maybe would be done
over the years, you know, as the stigma was around quietly, but never mm-hmm. really talked about. Really, at the end of the day, Proper Man had a lot to do with helping you.
Well, I mean, that sounds egotistical, but I know where you...
It's not.
I think I know where you're going with
this,
but... Yeah, no, I mean, Jason, really, before it was even Proper Man, really, it was, I was going through a tough time and making a move, just going through a separation and, going into, split family situation and moving to the Okanagan. And really, I was able to kind of find a place to kind of start over, so to speak. And it was nice that, I was able to reconnect with Jason because we kept in touch, of course, he's been my close friend for many, many years.
So he moved from Northern BC down to...
Adventures. Well, we did, yeah, we did a few ventures there from Kitimat, into Vancouver and stuff. So it was kind of a reset, so to speak. So really it was, we had no intention of playing music. It just didn't even occur to me. And then I think, truthfully, I don't even remember why we decided to just sit down. And I think it was probably a couple too many whiskeys. And then really it was just, let's have a little jam just for old time's sake. And then really like right away I think there was something there the first time we kind of sat down. Oh, okay, yeah, I remember. And then, I had a laptop with GarageBand on it, which is a recording software,
yeah.
Right?
So
he also had it was a neat little unit. It's like a Roland unit that you can record on. It's a little board and you can record on it, mix and do all sorts of things. So he had left this, I don't know if he manipulated it and left, left the unit, in the basement of
a breadcrumb.
I don't even know if that's the real story, but
sure,
I'll stick with it. Anyway, so we had the recording unit in the rental house at the winery house in Peachland there. It was a beautiful property. So, he was kind enough he was doing his winery operations on that property. So the house was vacant. So I stepped in and rented it, and so with the split family situation, I'd have my two daughters with me every other week. So the recording unit was down there, and so I had just one night just thought, oh, okay, I'll muck around, and I sent him something that I was quite proud of, and Jason's funny because when he doesn't like something, I know when he doesn't like something.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was, good try, he was very
encouraging
he's rebuttal. A sweetheart, but he knows how to burst your bubble in a kind of a kind way.
Yeah.
And so, so we kept working on it, and he'd, humor me and put, he'd do vocals on it and add some keys and stuff like that. And, he's very creative with that kind of stuff and we hadn't, even to that point, we didn't really know what we were doing or what direction and I think he just got, I think he just had enough of me sending him garbage. So when I say garbage, it's like, it's just not connecting with
either of us. You don't have to disclaim it. I get it.
I was proud of some of the stuff. And so
it wasn't gelling.
And then I think he decided, one night let's just get the recording and you and I will sit. And back in the day in Glasshead, there was the old punk band in Kitimat where we kind of did quite well with that little pop punk band. I mean, we, won a CBC Galaxy Award, Rising Star Award. And, we toured, we went to Japan, got paid to go to Japan to tour. And so...
That's a lot of adventures for an indie band.
It is. Yeah. I mean, we were big in Japan, that's only in a few cities, but... that talk about an opportunity that you couldn't refuse, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it was something else. And, Now I've kind of lost where I was going with this story. So
No. It's good because I want to go back to something that you said before we before we continue on, because I mean obviously things did gel and it's grown into a direction where the two of you in that basement could probably never have even fathomed this being where you're at right now.
Yeah, and so that's thanks for jogging my memory there. So so basically we when we would kind of write with Glasshead, we'd sit down with Bacardi, Lyman, and Coke.
Yep,
that was, I don't know what it was.
A little bit of inspiration.
I think it was probably because it was cheaper and it had a decent taste. You know, we were lazy at the time until he became, and you know him and I became cocktail kind of gurus. Nori thinks he's pretty good with making cocktails. He's getting better. He's getting better.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. We'll tell him that. We'll let him know.
No, he's too.
You keep going, buddy.
Yeah. And so his idea was, you know what, let's just, for old time's sake, pour us a couple of Bacardi Lymans and Coke and have a couple of puffs of something else, you know, we just started kind of rocking out, doing our thing, and
you on guitar at the time, or was it?
I think at that time, because that machine kind of had a drum machine on it.
Yep.
So it was more, we'd like pass the guitar to one another.
Oh, that's
fun. He played guitar and sang with Glasshead, right? So we were kind of doing that. And I think we did have the electronic drum kit down there for that night for sure.
Yep.
And then something happened and, we started writing and playing this song and I can't remember if it was Jason and I, it's like, it sounds like a song that a German kid in, Lederhosen would be like dancing to. And we just couldn't stop laughing. And I think, but with that kind of, not mistake, but
yeah, what
came out of us that night, it just kind of, it drove to that European sound and it was, a slurring kind of British accent, kind of what he was trying to put over that. And it just oh my God, this is what we need to do.
It brought joy there.
And it brought out, kind of our influences too, with New Wave. So, and
Depeche Mode or some of these other.
The Cure.
Yes.
After the kind of the metalhead kind of phase, like I was talking about what I was listening to. Yeah. I mean, anything that was good. So that included New Wave, secretly, because it was a weird thing back then, and I think it is to this today for kids, teenagers, like you want a certain thing to be your own, and when it gets popular, you gotta not like it, right? And that was New Wave for me. It was so popular.
Yep.
It was on the radio. I loved a lot of the music that was out there for New Wave, and I loved a lot of the artists. And it's been a huge influence for me, guitar players, from Flock of Seagulls.
Yep. And, Morrissey? Are you a Morrissey guy?
I respect. I didn't. Yeah. Yeah. Totally. I mean, I.
But that genre, all those.
Yeah. I mean, all that stuff. The Smiths.
Yeah.
Tears for Fears. Yeah. What I learned later, as I tried to progress as a better musician and a guitar player, of how underrated some of these, new wave guitar players, musicians were, because of how they completed a song. Not saying metal bands were not great bands. I mean, they were individual players.
It's a different process, everything. Yeah.
But New Wave and that kind of thing, what attracted me to it was, I think it went back to the basics of layering and melody and sounds and how it completed a band, and it was a team effort, and that's why it's kind of stuck around as an influence to me, like the Police and all these
Bowie.
I love Bowie. Yeah. But you weren't really supposed to really like him.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yes, absolutely.
I
almost like a little secret
material. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's just he was incredible.
I'm going to see Aerosmith, but I'm listening to Bowie.
Yeah. And but yeah, the big influence and U2. I mean, massive influence for me. Yep. The, you know, the Edge, the way he was the epitome of. Layering and just innovation of what he did for sounds and
he's
a competent guitar player, you know, 10 times the guitar player I am, and you know, and how he revolutionized
his guitar sound
and how many, and to this day I'm still, it's like, god damn it, it sounds exactly like the Edge, but so how can I make it, you know, sound like my own? So it's incredible what yeah, I just thought they were incredibly underrated artists.
Yep.
Maybe at, you know, looking back at the time, it's like, so.
I want to go back to these basement sessions in Proper Man, what would become Proper Man.
Yeah.
You talk about some of the things that you were going through now. I mean, I know, you know, off camera, we've even talked about how much you love your family. Your family's everything. You know, and but at the same time, you know, there's a lot of guys who watch and listen to this stuff who have gone through their own version of when a family splits up and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And there's kind of two or three things that we go through. We go through the mechanics of what needs to happen next, adjusting to change, sometimes many, many times. Mm-hmm. Then there's the family aspect of what's the dynamic going to look like. How is everybody? Is it combative? Is it, how emotional is it and all that? And then many times, lastly, is, well, how am I doing? What am I going through? Mm-hmm. One of the things that, you know, Jason has talked about and whatnot is that, you know, friendship is really, really important. And starting a band when guys are going through things that are really, really tough, you know, is one of those things that can sometimes help get people through things.
Absolutely.
For everybody, because it feels good to help, but it also is necessary to be helped, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
As you were going through what you were going through, what are some of the things that, on the third category, the things that you were dealing with at the time when you went through this stuff?
I think, you know, you automatically kind of the first things you think about is, oh, well, you know, how is this going to affect the kids? You know, if there's guilt, you know, there's, you know, what could I have done different, you know, to not go into this situation, you know? So, I mean, it's almost like a grieving process. I mean, like you hit it perfectly. I mean, there's different kind of phases.
Yeah.
And yeah, you really need to rely on the people that, you know, that you care about, you know, and not be afraid to rely on people like that. And so,
easier said than done.
It is. It really is.
Like, was that hard for you to even reach out, or did you internalize a lot of this stuff, or did you reach out? I mean, did you know that automatically that you needed somebody to reach out to help?
Oh yeah, I mean, like, you know, the first people really, obviously, you know, would be like my mom and, you know, stuff like that. So, but of course there's that, you know, even having, you know, getting the nerve to tell
hesitation.
Her,
there's hesitation like, there.
Oh my
even.
God, I've, you know, she's going to be disappointed, you know, and, you know, and, but, you know, she was very supportive, you know, and.
The fear usually is worse than the.
Absolutely it is. Yeah. And then, you know, then reaching out to friends to tell, you know, and then how do you bring this news out so that it's, you know, not found out on Facebook, you know, like something awkward like that. So, so it's hard, but you have to do it. Like, I just looked at it more. Yeah. I just, this is something I need to do and I need to deal with it. And, like growing up, you know, in my kind of family situation, but with my father and my mother, you know, very, very traditional, you know, stay at home mom and, you know, dad works 9 to 5, you know, supper's on the table. And so it's, and great values were given to my brother and I, but it's also, you know, it's, there's things like, you know, stiff upper lip, you know, like, you know,
be,
you know,
just man up, deal with it,
you know, you've got to deal with it. And so, I think the concept is yeah, I know what they're saying, but I don't think there was that, you know, the knowledge of how important really it is to kind of reach out and ask for help when you need help, because you know, man up could mean so many different ways, you know, things, right? And manning up, in my opinion, would be, yeah, not afraid to be vulnerable, not afraid to ask for help, and just, you know, and be that supportive person to somebody who needs that help too, and know when to ask for help. And yeah, it's a difficult thing. And
we haven't talked about this aspect of He Changed It yet, but that's something that we've talked about. I mean, gosh, it's about fourth or fifth episode that we've put out. He Changed It. We want to change the world. That's what the team wants to do, yeah. And wants to make men's mental wellness something that can be easily brought out into the light with no stigma and nothing attached to it. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we as a group want to do is take back the phrase man up.
Yeah.
And literally make it the definition that you just talked about, that manning up is, yeah, here's what I'm going through and here's what we're going to do about it, and having it to be a phrase that includes vulnerability right from the get-go.
Yeah.
Not the stiff upper lip part, the traditional definition or stigmatized version of what man up might be.
Yeah.
And it's just so cool to hear you just even organically say that. Clearly, that is something that has come to you from learning.
Absolutely, yeah.
Did you ask Jason for help, or did he see that his friend needed help?
You know, we're both kind of the same. We don't, literally, we could sit in his basement bar and not say a single friggin' thing to one another and just be content. You know, I mean, but I think we just both knew, because he went through a similar thing many, many years ago. And so he understood. He understood how hard it is and how you need to lean on people. And he did lean on people, and I'm glad he did, because it just gets you through the process. I don't want to say easier, but I mean, it just makes it. It's a process, right? So it's not, and it's never going to be a perfect process. But he just knew, and I think music was kind of our out, and then really, and then as the band started to, you know, to develop, like really, like you said, everyone's got their situation, whether, you know, with family life or friends, and we're all blessed and fortunate to be, you know, be able to do this in a place like this. have our own jam spot, really.
Yeah.
Make music as a hobby and as a passion, and, you know, live out our midlife crisis like this. You know, I mean, Justin's the young guy, but, you know, he's still got a partner. He's still got a family.
Absolutely.
And so everyone's, I think the way we approach this band is why it's been successful, is because we do rely and lean on one another and each other's families, and we've made it, you know, kind of got my girlfriend, wife, partner, whatever you want to call it. You know, I consider her my wife, you know, but, you know, we've got our wives' pictures on the wall here, and, you know, and how we've built this band is on really family and friends and making it accessible to myself and my partner Angela, and, you know, to our kids. And, you know, I think that's why it's been successful, because, yeah, I think I said it before, it's a family oriented.
I love that,
you know.
And, yes, I mean, the cool thing about this is when you guys talk, you guys are a family, you guys are a brotherhood.
Yep.
But then that brotherhood, your families come first.
Absolutely.
More than anything.
Yeah.
And you guys are intrinsically there for each other. If one of you, like we talk about Nori and what he went through with his wife, and how you guys were there for him when that was happening, and how you, and it's almost ironic in a sense that, you know, Jason goes through something in his life, sees you going through something in your life. Okay, let's bring music to it. Music can be an outlet for us. It can be a gateway to us expressing our friendship, our past with each other, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Clearly, though, as Proper Man develops, completely different than the previous band because of these things that you have learned along the way and taken these lessons and literally instilled them into the thing that you use as this outlet, as this creative outlet, as this... Yeah. I mean, you know, you have a job that I think is extremely important And it's one that helps serve the greater community. You work for the, you know, environment.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, if that is not your passion, mm-hmm. if that's not the thing that brings you all that joy, you need to find other things in your life. And I don't want to put words in your mouth. I think every guy out there who's working somewhere that doesn't necessarily fill their cup needs to find something that fills your cup.
Yeah.
And that's what Proper Man seems to, again, this thing, it writes itself. The band is titled Proper Man.
Yeah.
And it seems like what you guys are doing is to help keep you be proper men.
absolutely. And that's exactly it. And I think that's the title Proper Man really is like, you know, how can we be or help others be the best man that you can be? I mean, and it sounds like a cheesy slogan but really that's kind of the influence is, you know,
do you remember where the name came from? I haven't asked that question yet.
Truthfully, I'm sure Jason somehow made it up. goodness. I wish I remember that one. Sorry.
Because
I'm sure there's a really, really good story behind that.
Yeah.
there has to be. But no, really,
But it's not just the name of a band. It's an attitude.
I think the genesis of it really is from that portrayal of being a gentleman, dressing smartly, you know, just
being
nice to women, you know, being nice to your kid, being a family man, you know, that's being good to the community, you know, bringing back to the community. I think that's really where, you know, Proper Man, that's where that name really, I think, came from.
It's an attitude. It really is. And when you see you on stage, like, and make no mistake, you guys rock, but you do it kindly.
We do slip up on the swear words at once.
I don't think that's. I think you can still swear kindly.
No, I know, and I'm joking, but nothing, you know, makes us happier than seeing, you know, people really enjoying it, and I think what the band has done, what I've heard the feedback. Is it takes people back too, you know, like it takes, you know, men back or, you know, and it takes, you know, to takes you back to a spot, you know, where nostalgia, I'm sure Jason's going to word that, Jason's going to use that word.
I'm certain he will.
And that's what, you know, that's what it's all about, having a good time. And
I want to talk about the character, that some people in the band, they look at their role as a total character,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, Nori being Slim Pickens,
mm-hmm.
you know, Justin being Killer.
Mm-hmm.
What's your character?
29. And really, it's a silly story. It really is. We were getting fitted for suits.
Yeah.
And, we were in the
we as being the band.
The band, yeah. Yep. So we were getting fitted for proper suits, you know, so it came to my turn. And I said, my pant size is 29. I'm sorry. I wish it was more interesting or funnier than that.
No, but really, I want to know the difference between 29 and Petri. Like what's the difference?
Honestly, 29, I really don't have, I can't really distinguish Petri from 29, except 29 is up on stage here. I still try 29 still tries to be Petri, and Petri tries to be 29. I get to potentially throw up my back every once in a while I'm up here, like, you know. But really, I throw out my hips and my ankles and stuff running with Angela, you know, my wife. And so I don't have
You see them being the same. Your authentic self is the guy that's up here playing.
I dress really nice up here.
Yeah.
And I try and dress up nice when I'm out, you know, being Petri, but oddly enough, sometimes, and it can vary. Sometimes I feel more comfortable being Petri out there. Sometimes I feel more comfortable being 29 up here.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
I don't know. Yeah, there is no credible story to say that 29 and Petri is different.
This is the credible story. The credible story that you come up here and the idea that, and I mean the journey that you've been on, the things that you've gone through.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems to me that authenticity is extremely important to you, and everything that you do, including the releases. The releases that you do, music being, you know, kind of a chief one for you, obviously.
Yeah.
You're the same guy, and that seems to be, that's something that you've learned. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that's the impression I'm getting.
Yeah, I try, like, to this day, you know, like, lessons learned from, you know, from where I was when I moved here to where I am now in a, you know, in a better place and happy and always working on myself, you know. I'm
How do you work on yourself?
Well, I mean, this band.
Yep.
With my wife.
Yep.
She challenges me. She's a great woman. I think exercise is important.
Yep.
for not only physical but mental health, and to be able to balance things and keep your body and your mind in a good place.
Yep.
Or it helps you. I think there's a foundation there, you know, physical activity. Makes you feel better about yourself. I feel, and I'm not trying to pitch you know, a lifestyle here.
But no.
It's, I think one thing I've learned is that's helped me as a stress relief. It's helped me to be able to do this. It's helped me, you know, because it when I'm getting into this age, I'm feeling my. It's only natural to start feeling about. You know, yeah. Thinking about your mortality, and you know, my father passed away at an early age, at 56. You know, I'm 50 now.
Oh, so young. Yeah,
I'm cognizant of, you know, what not a fear, but I mean that's
no, but cognizant. I think is
I'm
a good
cognizant.
You're aware.
I don't want to be gone yet. You know, at 56, I feel like I have a lot more to do and explore and just, yeah. So, yeah.
I appreciate that you're able to kind of share some of these lessons. Clearly, you know, again, it's a theme. Yeah, you know, Jason went through lessons, saw you, your friendship brought you through lessons, brought you to the place that you all are now. You're all mm-hmm. taking these lessons and using them and expressing them in such a positive way. What are some of the songs that you guys have written that you that are close to your heart that you're really proud of?
Oh my goodness! I mean, there's so many, Mike. I mean, I literally have hundreds of songs that, you know, are, you know, archived on my MacBook, and
yeah.
You know, and he's probably got hundreds on his Roland Tascam, that yep. unit that, you know,
yeah.
And we still use that to this day. You know, I'll send him something. honestly. I think I'm probably proud, you know, it's not necessarily my favorite song, but yeah. I'm proud of Pub Night. That's one of the first songs that we as a, you know, that we came up with, and it's the one that's still in our arsenal, so to speak.
Yep.
And it's kind of stood the test of time for us.
Yep.
There's so many. There's
good
so
video
songs.
For that song, right?
Yeah, yeah, you know.
Norrie's House, was that
Pub Night? Yeah, that was Pub Night. No, that was that one had various clips.
Oh, okay. I thought there was one shot at Norrie's House. It was basically
that was
a
I
hard
drink.
Party.
Yeah,
oh, that was I Drink.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, that was a fun time.
That's
yeah,
a great song.
We filmed that at Norrie's. And so that's a special one too, because that was our kind of our second jam space was in Slim's. Slim and Kristen's basement there.
Yep.
So he kind of built a bar and so we thought we'd have this alternate between Jason's old bar stage area and Slim's place.
Well, there's a theme. The idea, you know, Pub Night, I Drink, Broken Hearts
Booze.
Club, you know?
Booze and bars, right?
No. And getting together and friendship though and that's really camaraderie.
Yeah, it really is.
Which is what you guys are all about. Tell me about Bloodless.
Bloodless is, you know what? Bloodless is, I love that song.
Yep.
And I love playing it. And I'm going to tell you a couple reasons why, because I didn't write a single lick in that song.
You're kidding.
No, and I love it because, you know, it's like playing a cover song, but it's being, for me to be able to play it when somebody else has written the parts,
yeah,
has been a treat because, and how that song grew, and I didn't have to do a single recording session. I'm lazy. So that's kind of fun.
How about you're busy?
Yeah, no,
because you are that too.
And literally, like Travis had written that song, yep, with Jason.
Yeah,
and the guitar parts, what you hear on that track when we do release it,
yeah,
it's all Travis's tracks. And when he sent me the song, hey man, do you mind doing your parts for this? And I told him, Travis, nothing needs to be done. Like you've captured what's needed in this song.
Yeah.
So I love that song, and we've already played it live a couple times now, and I enjoy it. And it's a different direction, right? It really is a different type of song for Proper Man.
Yeah.
Because it is, it's an anthem. I for definition, like an anthem being big,
yeah,
being you know, explosive and, yeah, powerful. That's how I would describe it. Whereas our other material that, you know, Jason and I have written, have been more on the kind of new wavy,
yeah,
kind of the I guess the, what do you call, the bread and butter Proper Man stuff.
Sure.
And same with you know, the other new song is a little bit more edgier, right?
Yeah.
So, but Bloodless is a great song, and I think it captures some interesting stuff for the band, but also for Jason, for Norm, because there's some hard work there for him, and he put his heart out on some of that, on those vocal lines and the way he's projecting it out. So I was proud of him.
I would submit physically and mentally, he's putting a lot of stuff out there.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
It's, like
it's almost funny. It's not funny to watch him on stage, but you can tell it takes a lot out of him.
Yeah.
And it's a difficult, difficult song to open a set with. And that's what we've decided to do.
Yeah. Well, in the writing,
kudos to him.
Yeah, absolutely. The writing of it too. I mean, to get something like that, it takes a lot to get something like that.
Oh, absolutely. And I think you'll learn from Travis, probably Travis and Jason, more of what went into that and what, you know.
Yeah.
But it just goes to show and prove that this band, this brotherhood, like anyone's allowed to bring something to the table, you, yeah, know, and we all respect one another enough as human beings and as musicians that we just trust in the process and we trust in ourselves. So it's pretty cool.
I'm gonna ask one last question.
Sure.
I assume the family split, toughest thing you've ever gone through?
It's up there, absolutely, you know, yeah, the death of my father, you know, death, yeah, of friend, you know, of course it's up there. It's a life-changing event. Yeah.
You know, if you said this yourself, one of the first things that happens when you go through something or something, mm-hmm, that's happening is you start second guessing, what could I have done differently? That sort of,
yeah,
thing. You've got, yeah, a lot of time now where there's been healing and reflection, and obviously, mm-hmm, you're in a very different place now than you were then.
Yeah.
If there was a couple pieces of advice you could give to yourself back then, what would they be?
You know what, really, it's be kind to yourself sooner, you know, and really.
So don't beat yourself up.
Exactly. And I know it's hard. Yeah. It's natural to feel guilty and it's natural to feel like a failure. It's natural, but you know, cause you originally asked, like, you know, through that process, what was one of the things that you learned? And that is, if you can, if there's any way you can try and be, you know, good to yourself and don't forget about yourself, you know. And you know, my partner, she's said, I you know, if you're not okay, I'm not okay. You know, like you first have to, you have to be in a good place. You have to be happy before anyone else around you can be happy or I don't know if that
self-love
makes sense.
No, it does. It's the airplane analogy, I think, in many times. You know, if you're flying with your child, mm-hmm. if the cabin depressurizes, whose mask do you put on first? You put
Absolutely.
Yours on first.
It's not to be selfish.
So if that's what you're saying.
To be more effective and to be able to... Exactly. I think that's a really good analogy, actually. And
you don't sacrifice yourself for everybody else because there's nothing left. Yeah. And you can't... That's a one-time thing.
Take it easy on yourself. Be good to yourself. And, you know, don't be afraid to lean on your friends and family. Honestly, you have to do it.
Those two things you said are some of the easiest things in the world, but they're also the things that we either dismiss so quickly. Like when you say be good to yourself, there's so many guys that are going through stuff that don't take what you just said and internalize it. Like ask yourself the question, am I being good to myself? What could I do to be good to myself? But we don't do it. And I just think it's really powerful. Mm-hmm. It may sound simple or easy. And it is simple, but it's not necessarily easy because of all the things.
I think it's a built stigma.
Yeah.
Especially for men. Yeah. I think it's, you know, you've got to be, you know, the old thought is you've got to be that provider. You've got to make everything okay. And you've got to fix things.
Yeah.
If you can't fix yourself or you can't, you know, put yourself in a place where you can be happy. It's a lost cause. And sorry, my train of thought.
No.
Once again,
are you kidding me? No, there's no. You're that's bang on. Like no, it's.
There was another point I was trying to make with the other aspect. So you had
friends with reaching out.
You've got to internalize that and don't look weak, you know, and that's the old kind of thought and stigma is that asking for help is, you know, is a sign of weakness, and which is actually, in my opinion, the opposite, you know.
It is. You're right. So, it's a sign of strength.
Yeah. Yeah,
but it's easy to say, hard to do. But the reason that I think that it's so cool talking about this with you guys is these are the messages that keep coming through. Mm-hmm. All of you clearly all kind of believe in this because you are this for each other, right? You just kind of built it into what you're doing.
Absolutely.
And the first time that you do it, it becomes easier.
Yeah.
And you realize, oh, wait a second, this is a real piece of truth that has power attached to it. So just, you know, as through this conversation, I just want to encourage any guy that's out there that's going through something. The hardest time to reach out and ask for help is the first time. But once you realize it's an actual pathway to moving forward and to getting out of the situation that you're in, move to that. Make that the first thing that you do. Yeah. Don't do it when you have to do it, right? Like,
yeah. Seems like a monumental task, but you're right. And the sooner you can do that, the sooner you can be better to yourself. You know, the more easier the rest of the process, or the process will kind of work its way through.
You know? We at Heat Change are just really so excited to have you guys talk a little bit about what this entire Heat Change Knit movement is about and be a part of this. Thank you so much for taking time to bare your soul a little bit and talk to us about
this.
It's we appreciate it so much.
And thank you. And I'm a huge fan of what you're doing. And when we talked earlier on about the concept and, you know, Heat Change, I was 100% on board what you're doing. I hope, And I know it will help men out there and people. So,
absolutely. Lastly, before we go, what is Proper Man to you?
Oh my goodness! Why would you see? You said there was going to be no like off the cuff, on your toes. Yeah, keeping me on my toes. Oh my goodness! What is Proper Man to me? My goodness. I honestly, the I'm trying to think of something so profound and so witty, and nothing's coming. But the first word that's coming to me is brotherhood. Really, it is for this as a band. It's a brotherhood, and we've talked ad nauseum about it today, and how we just rely on one another, how we get to do our passion together, get to share our struggles, our triumphs together, get to make people happy together, you know, and we get to do these kind of cool things together, you know, and I think it just, yeah, it's cool to be thought of as a unit, and as a you know, as a proper man concept, because the concept is brotherhood, being good to ourselves, being good to other people, you know, your families. Yeah. And so,
hey, guess what? You didn't think that you said something profound. Guess what the truth is? That's awesome. Jeez. And it is a brotherhood, and it's so evident. Yeah. Thank you very much for being part of this today.
Appreciate it, Mike.
And we'll see you on stage.
Yeah.